Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. This Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK Japan, Radio Havana Cuba, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, and Spanish National Radio. We'll begin with NHK World Radio Japan. The Japanese government has decided to release over 1 million tons of radioactive contaminated wastewater from the Fukushima nuclear power plant into the Pacific Ocean. Officials said the dumping would begin in about 2 years, and South Korea and China were among the first to condemn the plan. Egypt is demanding that the Japanese owner of the cargo ship that blocked the Suez Canal pay compensation of almost $1 billion. A brief update on the military war in Myanmar. The foreign ministers of Iran and Russia say that they will fight together to lift U.S. unilateral sanctions. NHK Japan.
The Japanese government is seeking support for its plan to release treated water from the crippled Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant into the ocean. The water will be diluted before its release, so its concentration of contaminants meets global safety levels. Industry Minister Kajiyama Hiroshi spoke online with the head of the International Atomic Energy Agency on Wednesday, a day after the Japanese government officially made its decision.
With the cooperation of the IAEA, we will thoroughly disclose information and fend off reputational damage.
It gives me great pleasure to agree to your request for cooperation from the IAEA.
They agreed to try to arrange an IAEA mission to Japan later this year to give advice to the plant's operator. The government held an online meeting to explain the decision to foreign missions in Japan. Diplomats from nearly 50 countries attended. The plan triggered sharp reactions from some neighboring countries.
The ocean is not Japan's trash can. The Pacific is not Japan's sewers.
South Korea's presidential office says President Moon Jae-in told the Japanese ambassador to his country to convey his concern to Tokyo. Moon also reportedly instructed officials to consider bringing the matter to the International Tribunal for the Law of the Sea. Japan's top government spokesperson declined to comment on the move, saying the government has not received any notification.
We will continue to provide accurate information based on scientific evidence, thoroughly explain our efforts to decommission the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant, including the handling of the treated water, and seek understanding from the international community.
Water is used to cool molten nuclear fuel. It mixes with rain and groundwater that flows into damaged reactor buildings, amounting to more than 100 tons each day. This water undergoes a treatment process that removes most radioactive material, but it still contains radioactive tritium. The treated water is then stored. The plant has about 1,000 tanks, which are now 90% full. The remainder is expected to fill up sometime next year. The treated water will be diluted, so the tritium concentration is well below national standards and about 1/7 of the level the World Health Organization suggests is safe for drinking water. Japan's nuclear regulators will examine the plant operator's plans to build facilities to dilute the water before it's released into the ocean. The regulators decided on Wednesday to open the examination process to the public. They also decided to consider stepping up monitoring of tritium in the ocean. The government plans to start releasing the treated water in about 2 years. Egyptian authorities are demanding that the Japanese owner of the ship that blocked the Suez Canal last month pay compensation in the amount of $900 million. Media in Egypt report a court has issued an impound order. The Ever Given got stuck in the key waterway on March 23rd. Global supply chains were disrupted while it took nearly a week to free the 400-meter-long ship. It's been in a nearby lake while authorities investigate. Shoei Kisen Kaisha says the Suez Canal Authority is demanding $900 million, including costs to refloat the ship. Myanmar has entered its New Year's holiday period. This year, people are quietly mourning the 710 people that have been killed in the military crackdown since the February 1st coup. In the country's largest city, Yangon, few people were outdoors on Tuesday and traffic was sparse. The main street in front of the city hall, where a large stage is set up every year for New Year's events, remains occupied by the police. People usually go out into the streets during the holidays to sing and dance and throw water on one another. But this year, activists are urging the public to spend the holidays in mourning as a show of protest against the military.
How can we have any fun amid this turmoil?
Activists are calling for anti-coup demonstrations during the week-long holidays, raising fears of a further crackdown on protesters by the military. The foreign ministers of Iran and Russia say their countries will work together to demand the United States lift sanctions against them. Iran's Mohammad Javad Zarif and his Russian counterpart Sergei Lavrov met in Tehran on Tuesday to exchange views on the Iran nuclear deal. Former U.S. President Donald Trump withdrew from the pact and reimposed sanctions against Tehran, which in turn stepped up its nuclear activities. The administration of President Joe Biden hopes to rejoin the deal. Earlier this year, Biden increased sanctions against Russia for its crackdown on opposition forces. At a news conference after the meeting, Zarif stressed that the lifting of U.S. sanctions is necessary to revive the nuclear agreement.
We have seriously discussed lifting sanctions through deepening our cooperation on the nuclear agreement.
All unilateral sanctions imposed by Washington violate the Iranian nuclear deal and, of course, should be lifted.
In March, Iran signed an agreement with China to deepen cooperation in areas such as the economy and security for the next 25 years. Moves have been accelerated among Iran, Russia, and China to work together to counter the U.S.
Those reports were from NHK Radio Japan. They are now heard from 9:30 to 10 p.m. at 7245 and 7355 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. Next, Radio Havana, Cuba. At the United Nations, the Venezuelan foreign minister rejected the U.S. freezing financial assets to promote regime change and inhibit sustainable development. Then a viewpoint on the Biden plan to finance increased border policing in Honduras, Guatemala, and Mexico to slow migration. The so-called dry corridor from Chiapas to Costa Rica, where 10 million impoverished people live, is described. The lack of COVID vaccines to poor countries through the global initiative is blocked until as late as June. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Venezuelan Foreign Minister Jorge Arriaza has ratified the right of developing countries to receive fair, special, and differentiated treatment at the United Nations Economic and Social Council Forum, held virtually on Monday. Arriaza rejected any measure aimed at limiting the financial capacities of the South American nation. Quote, how can we talk about financing for development if there are powers that politically manipulate the international financial system to promote changes of governments, denying countries access to their legitimate resources? Likewise, the foreign minister expressed his concern about the devastating socio-economic impact and the multidimensional crisis generated by the COVID-19 pandemic. Jorge Arias has said that, quote, the only possible way to peacefully overcome this multidimensional and global crisis is dialogue among equals, respect for the self-determination of peoples, and planetary solidarity. Venezuela's top diplomat ratified the country's commitment to the Addis Ababa Action Agenda for Financing for Sustainable Development in his speech at the United Nations Economic and Social Council Forum for the follow-up of Financing for Development. Quote, the unilateral coercive measures against Venezuela have generated losses of $24,258,000, added to the $5.47 billion illegally blocked in the international banking, denounced the foreign minister.
The United States government recently announced that an agreement had been reached with three migrant-sending countries, Mexico, Guatemala, and Honduras, to mobilize the army and police to their respective borders in order to contain the flow of irregular travelers to the north. And although none of the Latin American nations involved in this matter has confirmed such agreement, thus far data includes the number of troops that each one of these countries committed to this operation. This only shows that both the recipient and the countries of origin of these people insist on putting the cart before the horse and seeking solutions based on the use of force, which actually do not solve the problem at all. First of all, the vast majority of those who try to reach the United States borders do so because they have no other alternative, not because it's a voluntary decision. No one chooses to be poor, but in certain areas of Mexico and the Northern Triangle, this condition is multiplying at an accelerated rate, and not only because of the COVID-19 pandemic. There's an extensive stretch of 1,600 kilometers long and 100 to 400 kilometers wide, which goes from Chiapas in the southeast of Mexico to Costa Rica, called the Dry Corridor, where more than 10 million people live, mainly from Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. These people do not live there by choice, but as a result of a process that began more than 200 years ago and allowed a small group of tycoons to take possession of the best and most fertile lands, pushing large masses of peasants towards barren and infertile areas. The United States was no stranger to this dispossession, and concerning this matter, Miguel Ángel Asturias wrote his trilogy. But this dry corridor has sometimes changed its conditions. Last year, it was hit by a severe climatic phenomena that flooded and destroyed the little that could have been sown. That's where most of those who make a journey that can cost them their lives come from. They pursue an illusion that often ends in a nightmare. The fact that they seal the borders with soldiers and police officers makes little difference, because they'll keep trying anyway for one simple reason. They have nothing left to lose. Their present is disease, hunger, and violence. The past is a long repetition of the same, and the future does not exist. Is it really so difficult to understand that this is what should be changed and not something else to resolve the situation?
As many as 60 countries, including some of the world's poorest, might be stalled at the first shots of their coronavirus vaccinations because nearly all deliveries through the global program intended to help them are blocked until as late as June. COVAX, the global initiative to provide vaccines to countries lacking the clout to negotiate for scarce supplies on their own, has in the past week shipped more than 25,000 doses to low-income countries only twice on any given day. Deliveries have all but halted since last Monday. On Friday, the head of the World Health Organization slammed the, quote, shocking imbalance in global COVID-19 vaccination. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom said while 1 in 4 people in rich countries had received a vaccine, only 1 in 500 people in poorer countries had gotten a dose. COVAX will ship only the vaccines cleared by the WHO, and countries are increasingly impatient. Supplies are dwindling in some of the first countries to receive COVAX shipments, and the expected delivery of second doses in the 12-week window currently recommended is now in doubt.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu, though the podcasts are not updated anymore. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 5 p.m. to 11 at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. On to Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. Biden announced a new round of sanctions against Russia, and the United States will not remove soldiers from Germany as described by Trump. Then a series of brief global COVID reports. England has eased restrictions while most of the world is witnessing dramatic rises in infections and deaths and the banning of several vaccines. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
U.S. President Biden's administration has announced a new round of sanctions against Russia, including the expulsion of 10 Russian diplomats. This is in response to interference in last year's presidential election, as well as the hacking of U.S. government agencies. The Russian Foreign Ministry has condemned the sanctions. The United States says it is no longer planning to withdraw soldiers from Germany and will instead deploy an additional 500 troops. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin made the announcement alongside his German counterpart, Annegret Kramp-Karrenbauer. Mr. Austin is on an inaugural trip to Europe aimed at boosting defense ties with NATO allies amid heightened tensions with Russia.
Coronavirus restrictions are being eased further in England today in what Prime Minister Boris Johnson is calling a major step towards freedom. Some people headed for a drink just after midnight as pubs and restaurants reopen for outdoor customers. Gyms, hairdressers, libraries and shops can now also open their doors again for the first time since England went back into lockdown in early January. The openings come after a fast vaccine rollout and falling numbers of coronavirus cases and deaths, but authorities are still warning against complacency. Germany has passed 3 million infections. The Robert Koch Public Health Institute says more than 78,000 people have died from or with COVID-19. China's top disease control official says the country is formally considering mixing COVID-19 vaccines to offer greater protection against the coronavirus. That's after data show that China's domestically produced vaccines were less effective than some alternatives. And Australia has scrapped its target of inoculating the adult population by October. Health authorities say the AstraZeneca vaccine should no longer be given to people under the age of 50.
India will fast-track emergency approvals of COVID-19 vaccines that have been authorized by Western countries and Japan. The country is ramping up its vaccine rollout efforts as it battles soaring infection rates. And the Director General of the World Health Organization says confusion and complacency means that the pandemic is a long way from over. But proven public health measures could bring it under control within months.
BioNTech Pfizer will provide the European Union with an extra 50 million doses in the second quarter of this year. This is on top of the 200 million already earmarked for the EU. Denmark will stop using the AstraZeneca vaccine completely because of its possible link to rare cases of blood clots. This could delay Denmark's vaccination rollout by up to a month. And South Korea has reported its highest daily jump in new infections in 3 months. Health experts are blaming increased travel, which they say shows public vigilance is falling. The rollout of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine has been paused in the U.S., much of Europe, and South Africa after reports of rare blood clotting in a very small number of people. Health authorities said they are halting the use of the shot while they investigate the case. The suspension has dealt another huge blow to South Africa's vaccination rollout. In February, the country already stopped the use of the AstraZeneca vaccine after it showed low efficacy against an aggressive local viral variant. BioNTech Pfizer jabs are only due to arrive in the country next month, and experts have warned of a looming third wave of infections.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could make a donation for production cost of this listener-funded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Please, if you find this program beneficial, help support my efforts. I am grateful for donations from listeners in Willits, California and Ukiah, California. Many, many thanks. We will conclude with Radio Exterior de España or Spanish National Radio. Allison Hughes with Amy Egan report on the attack on a uranium enrichment facility in Iran, an Israeli cyber attack which could have caused a nuclear disaster. Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu announced he will not cooperate with the ongoing International Criminal Court investigation of war crimes against the Palestinians. In Ecuador, voters gave banker Guillermo Lasso an unexpected victory in the presidential election, promising free market economics and foreign investment to create jobs. Spanish National Radio.
The Natanz uranium enrichment facility in Iran was attacked on Sunday, with the U.S. and Israeli media recognizing it as a Mossad cyber operation, referring to the Israeli intelligence organization. The underground Iranian nuclear facility experienced a power outage, which, while releasing no contamination or provoking any injuries, could have caused a disaster. The alleged attack occurred a day after Iran celebrated National Nuclear Technology Day by launching new uranium enrichment centrifuges and reporting progress on the development of new, more advanced models. Iran insists its nuclear program is only for energy and medical use. Iran's foreign ministry accused Israel of seeking to derail the recently resumed talks to lift the sanctions on Tehran. The attack against the underground nuclear facility took place just days after the first meeting in Vienna aimed at rescuing the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, also known as the Iran nuclear deal, signed in 2015. In 2018, the U.S. under the Trump administration withdrew from the accord and reimposed crippling sanctions against Iran. Under the deal, Iran agreed to restrict its nuclear program in exchange for relief of economic sanctions and business opportunities. Iran's foreign minister, Javad Zarif, said Iran would not fall into Israel's trap. Zarif told Iranian media that Israeli officials have clearly said they will not allow progress to be made in lifting the sanctions, and now they think they are achieving their goal. But they will get their response in further nuclear progress. A foreign ministry spokesman confirmed that Iran is referring the incident to the United Nations. On Monday, Iranian officials said that they had identified the person who caused the electricity outage at the Natanz site. No more details were given.
Israeli media reported Thursday that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu had decided not to cooperate with the International Criminal Court investigation of possible war crimes in the occupied Palestinian territories because Israel does not recognize the tribunal's authority. Israel, like the US, is not party to the Rome Statute that established the ICC.
ICC prosecutors sent letters to the parties involved, calling on them to inform the court if they were conducting their own investigations into the alleged crimes and want an ICC inquiry deferred while that is going on. The Palestinians said that they would cooperate with the ICC, whose inquiry pertains to the alleged war crimes in the Israeli-occupied West Bank and in the Gaza Strip. Israeli soldiers have spoken out about some of the orders they had received in the 2014 50-day war in Gaza, which left 2,205 Palestinians dead, among them over 1,500 civilians, and killed 71 Israelis, 66 of them soldiers.
The rules were, if we see civilians, if we can see something 200 meters or closer to us, it's not a civilian at all. It's maybe a watcher for Hamas forces or a suicide bomber or just a terrorist. So We had no brief about civilians because it's too close to us, we can shoot and kill it. And the whole tanks just fired on random buildings and random targets. Most of our shooting was random. We didn't thought about civilian casualties and moral, and some people thought it's like a shooting range, some people thought it's fun, some people didn't thought about it at all. I just thought it's really, really bad to shoot on random targets without knowing the effects on the civilian population.
Netanyahu, nonetheless, insisted that the court is anti-Semitic.
This court that was established to prevent the repetition of the Nazi horrific crimes committed against the Jewish people is now turning its guns against the one and only state of the Jewish people.
Voters in Ecuador gave banker Guillermo Lasso an unexpected victory in the presidential elections with 52% in the runoff. The 65-year-old president-elect campaigned on promises of free market economics and foreign investment to create jobs. His rival, Andrés Arauz, campaigned on a return to the social welfare programs his mentor, former President Rafael Correa, instituted. Nearly 13 million voters were called to the polls on Sunday in Ecuador, and over 410,000 Ecuadorians living abroad. President-elect Lasso told his supporters, "We are taking on with responsibility the challenge of changing the fate of our country and achieving for everyone the Ecuador of opportunity and prosperity we all desire." Andrés Arauz, with 47.51% of the vote, conceded the victory to Lasso and assured his followers that with his defeat, it is time now to advance. We have to build bridges and construct a consensus. This is an electoral stumble, but it is in no way a political or a moral defeat. Lasso's victory may have been given a boost by the division on the left between Andrés Arauz and the indigenous leader Yaku Pérez, who called voter fraud after the first round of the vote in February. At that time, he won 1.8 million votes. For the runoff, he told his supporters to hand in null ballots in protest on Sunday. About 16.30%, or more than 1,679,000 voters, an unprecedentedly high number, had written Yaku Pérez on the ballots instead of marking one of the two candidates. In February, the indigenous leader's political group, Pachakutik, won the most representation ever in parliament and became the second political force there with 26 seats. About 7% of Ecuador's population is indigenous, and the Pachakutik plurinational unity movement platform is based on a social and environmentalist agenda, social justice and indigenous rights. In an interview in February, Yaku Pérez told reporters his group boasted the support not only of indigenous peoples and social and labor organizations, but of the general population.
Those reports by Allison Hughes and Amy Egan were from Radio Exterior de España or Spanish National Radio. Their news reports are now a daily segment of a magazine-style program which may be heard at their website, rtve.es, and by podcast as REE. On shortwave, they broadcast from 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific Daylight Saving Time at 17855 and 11940, although I cannot pick up their signal here in California. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. This shortwave report, which is now in its 25th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. The shortwave report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.